Welcome to Unlimited Parenting, where we discuss having children with disabilities or special health care needs. I'm Allison, and with me today is children's mental health advocate, Brittany Shipley. She's here to help guide us through some of the changes to the Idaho Behavioral Health Plan. Before we get into our questions, Brittany, I was hoping you could explain your why. What brought you into your role?
I have children with disabilities, and most specifically, my oldest has behavioral health conditions. And in navigating his systems, I realized early on that it came down a lot to who you know and what you know. And as I continued to navigate it, it didn't always matter that I was told a lot that, well, you have the skills, you're a social worker, you should know how to help your child. And I remember being told early on that we think you can manage it. And even when he needed the highest level of care and had been approved for the highest level of care, when my child was being denied from facility after facility because of the level of danger he was, because he was a danger to himself and others, and facilities felt like he was not someone that they want to take on and have around the other children in their place, I was told, you know, we think you can handle it and we believe you can and you have the skills and the knowledge and the training. But I was a single parent with another child in the home. And I was his primary target as his only parent because his father had died when he was young. And so I remember having to advocate and fight. And so something I've said continually since he was young is, if this is happening to me and I understand the system, then it's happening to everybody. And I don't want to see other parents who don't know the system and understand it get lost in this and feel like they don't have options. And so I want to help those other parents feel like they have those choices and understand it and have hope, and help those children get the help they need and help those families get the help they need and not get stuck. Because if they can get help sooner, then they have better options of being productive members of their society and of their home and be able to remain in their home and society. But sometimes they need bigger help, and that's okay. But if we all don't at least be presented with the right options, then we're never, ever going to get there. So,
and it really takes a really strong person to be that guiding hand for everybody else. It's not that you've been through it and you're helping people. It's that you're continuing to go through it, and yet you still choose to help people. So not only are you instrumental in all the work we do here at IPOL, but you're out there, you know, essentially at some points door knocking, helping families, individual families, holding their hand through the system. So I just wanted to add that in, that we see you and we appreciate you. But I also want to add that just so that listeners know, that you really are entrenched in systems and services. You're not just going through the systems yourself. You're not just helping families, but you're in the meetings. You're in the room where it happens, to make a Hamilton reference, right? You know the players at the table, and you continuously make yourself and your voice known. So is that a fair representation of what you're doing?
Thanks, Allison. Yeah, I mean, it is true. I do think that's huge. And I guess despite being at the table with the key players, right? I do co-chair some of the mandated meetings for the youth empowerment services, the JEFD settlement agreement, which is what resulted in the youth empowerment services for children's mental health in Idaho. And so in co-chairing them with the director of behavioral health in Idaho, while I sit at the table with him and stuff, my goal isn't to talk about my story, but to talk about like families. And sometimes I joke when I'm in those meetings about, like, I know you've all heard me say this a million times, or I feel like I'm beating a dead horse here, because I'll make arguments about, like, parents say this, or parents feel like this, or families this, or I myself live in a rural community. And so I am frequently in those meetings. I know Allison's heard me say this. I talk about, like, okay, well, what about the rural and frontier communities? Because if people in the urban communities can't get it, what about these areas? Or if we're talking about these services, then let's talk about how it's accessible in these areas. Or if we're looking at children with the lower scores on a CANS. Let's talk about the higher scores. How are they getting this now? And so my goal is to always represent all those needs. And I know another reference I use a lot is to your exact point about, you know, supporting others is, and taking a village kind of thing. But when you're navigating something for a child in crisis, it feels like you're drowning. And so most families can't keep their head above water when they're drowning. And that's realistic and it's hard. And so sometimes at any time when there's a couple of us who can keep our head above water, then it's our turn to help those who can't, because it's a lot. It's a lot when your kid's in crisis, you're in crisis then too. You're down there with them. And so if you have the capacity, if you're one of those few who can keep your head above water while drowning and kind of steer that ship for the others, then, you know, it's your time to hold the baton and help advocate for those who can't.
Absolutely. And there's always room for those people. If you're listening and you're one of those people, you know how to reach out to us. It'll be in the description box. If you want to help, we are actively searching for people who want to support. But if it's okay with you, I'll pivot and I want to ask you our first question. And these are questions not only that I personally have as a parent of a child with a serious emotional disturbance, but also questions that I have heard from parents in our community, whether that's on a Facebook group or a call that I have gotten or that one of my coworkers have gotten. So these are genuine questions from real parents. And that's the lens that I suppose we'll be taking throughout the rest of these. So question number one, why are we doing this? Like, we had Optum, we've had the Jeff D lawsuit, like you said, has been happening since the 80s. Why are we making this switch from Optum to Magellan?
So that is like the biggest question on everybody's mind. Why? And I think it's a good question. So as many people may or may not know, obviously the Jeff D settlement agreement resulted after, because the lawsuit has been going on now for 44 years. That's a really long time. Yeah. However, the settlement agreement only happened 10 years ago. And so the settlement agreement occurred as a way of saying, hey, you know, we're still not being compliant with providing these kids the services they need. And so when all that happened was around the same time that Optum came into play. And when Optum received their contract, they've been around for 10 years. And so how that happens is similarly to if you are in like a construction industry. I think that's a really another good example for people who are, you know, maybe not in kind of the mental health fields or other things like that. Contracts have to get put out. And so from any state agency, contracts have to get put out for a service. And so when a contract is put out, whether it's like to rebuild a highway or for a large construction project, this is another large project, right? We're looking at providing behavioral health services to the entire state. So a state agency put out a contract. And so then there is bids and there's a large, very complex process that goes through with reviewing the bids. And then there is a awarding process that goes through with scoring. And whoever has the highest scores is who wins that contract. And so then the previous contract awardee was Optum. And so that was who had won the contract. Optum's contract was renewed down the line. So Optum held it for 10 years. And that's who everybody has known. I think whenever we look at transitioning contracts, it's scary. Anything new is scary. However, a few years ago, when it was time to put out bids for new contracts, we went through the same formal process. Many people have heard a lot about this process as there were some, you know, heated differences. Optum had put in for a renewal again, as did Magellan and as did Beacon. Optum was not awarded. Beacon actually came in as the highest bidder. However, there were some differences found as they had been working with some people in the department on some either previous things. So they were, found to not be able to win or not be eligible, I think is the best way to put that. And so Magellan was the highest scorer. And so that's to keep it as ethical as possible. It has to go to the highest scorer. It is not about any individual entity for anything, right? It's not about just behavioral health. It's just how contract bids are done, period, from state agencies. So we now have Magellan. And I think, like I said before, I think anything new is scary, but sometimes new can be really good too. And so it's not to say that Optum ever did a bad job. It's just we have to follow protocol whenever it's a large contract bidding process.
That makes a lot more sense because I think a lot of families might have thought, oh, you know, what did Optum do wrong, right, to now have to switch to Magellan? And so it's, I think it's really helpful to hear that it's not about really anybody doing anything wrong or doing anything right. It's following the processes that we have in place to make sure things don't slip through the cracks and that we are, as a state, providing the best services to everybody that we can possibly can through a scoring system. So I think that that's really helpful. And I just want to say, you know, Magellan is having those listening sessions for parents where they were seeking that information and input. So it's not, you know, a new guy coming in trying to shake up and change everything. It's just, how do we provide the best to everybody? Now that I mentioned shaking things up and changes, do you, and again, I want to just point out, you know, Brittany is not a Magellan employee. She's a parent just like the rest of us, but she is at these tables. So do you know if there's going to be any changes or effects on the assessments that our kids get for this system? You know, the comprehensive diagnostic assessment, the CDA, or the CANS tool that we use. Are there any big changes now?
So there will be some changes, but nothing super significant, because a lot of those things are requirements of that settlement agreement. So a lot of that stuff is printed out, and those are just requirements we have to follow. And so, for example, with our, you know, CANS tool that we use, those are done every 90 days. That's not, that won't change. Now, with the caveat that they are done every 90 days or as needed, right? If there is a significant life change, if your child goes into an acute care center after having a crisis, that is a significant life change. Your child may need another CANS. So when we look at it from that perspective, they're probably going to have more than every 90 days. But and your CDA is done annually. Again, traditionally, if your child maybe was in a residential placement and returns home, they're probably going to have one sooner than that 1 year mark, because you're adjusting back to a home setting and you're probably going to want one to say, okay, let's look at what our new goals are going to be and how is this look in our home and community environment. That being said, your yearly CDA, your, you know, average CANS, those things will remain, and they're still going to be following all of those traditional protocols. I would add, though, we are looking at rolling out the Department of Health and Welfare's Division of Behavioral Health has a TCOM division, which is what oversees the CANS. And we're working on rolling out the CANS 3.0. And they have a lot of parent involvement in that. In fact, we're working with Allison to get her parent voice involved in that as well. And I think that's really important to note, because I don't know how many families out there have maybe not had the best experience with the CANS in the past, but those who have, we really wanted to remove some of that not strength-based, non-trauma and the trauma portions of it, because sometimes those don't go as planned. And when that happens, that was never the goal, right? The CANS is meant to be a strength-based assessment of your child's needs and strengths, right? So when they don't go that way, or if the emphasis is more on the kids' behaviors, things like that. So the launch of the CANS 3.0 is happening tangentially with the launch of Magellan. But this is meant to be a good thing. And there has been a lot of parent involvement behind the scenes of this, with a lot of training. And Dr. Lyons, who's actually the inventor of the CANS, has been working really hard with the Idaho team on this. And that's something we're actually really excited about, as it will really work with the families and with the children. And it actually is going to shorten the CANS significantly. So it won't be so long. It will actually remove that whole section on behaviors. So while I know that might sound daunting, I know even myself at first was like, well, hang on. I'm a really high behavioral kid. Don't you need to know that? The reality is anybody who does a CANS to Fidelity, there's a whole narrative section under each part. And so when they're scoring it and talking and engaging with you, as it should feel like a conversation and not a test, then they're going to collect that data and it's going to be reflected. And so I'm really excited. So yes and no, they should still happen in the same amount of time that they were happening. However, the CANS will change, but for the better, we believe.
And first off, I'm really excited to hear all of that. And the Department of Health and Welfare has also released a short YouTube video. It's just under 4 minutes on some of the updates for the new CANS. And we do have that shared on iPulse Facebook page. And it's linked also through the Department of Health and Welfare. I love the update. It's included about asking about access to technology to see if telehealth is a potential option. Just, you know, ushering into the 20th century, right? You know, when we talk about our rural frontier communities, there's not a lot of access, but we still have the onus is on us to provide those services. So what creative out of the box things are we trying? And another thing that I think you touched on that I really liked is that, you know, the strengths are going to come first now instead of the needs or the deficits. We're going to talk about, and especially, and when I think about my son and doing those assessments with him, he's still present during those first few minutes. He kind of gives his report and then maybe he saunters off, but sometimes he stays. And when he stays and he hears us talk about needs first, it sets a whole different tone versus when he stays and we move right to strengths and the things that he loves and he does well and how we love having him in our family. And I think that that's how you can tell that they really got that parental input from us, right?
Yes.
So I'm very excited about the CANS 3.0.
I could not agree anymore, Allison. And I think so many parents I've engaged with over the years, and even sometimes like school social workers, you know, anybody, the amount of parents that didn't know things about it were wild, right? I know for myself, right? If I took my child into the CANS, just like you were saying, we'd get to some questions and it was an instant trigger. And then we would leave and I would be leaving with my child who was then aggressive, who was then trying to hit me in the car, who was then all these things. And so to your point, right, having strengths first changes it. But I also think it's important that parents know that if there's going to be a question that you know is a trigger, you have the right to say, hey, to the provider, I think a couple of these questions I need to talk to you about away from my child. And that is your right. And that's okay. Because if you can't have that discussion in front of your kid without it triggering them and upsetting them and setting you away with an unsafe kid, that's not beneficial. Or if you have to sit there with your child and not answer them to fidelity, you're not helping get a true assessment for your child to help your child either. And so knowing those rights to get a true CANS is huge. So now there's this really cool infographic so parents understand all that too.
Absolutely. So I you know, as you can hear, bigger, better, brighter changes on the horizon for sure. Moving away from the CDA and the CANS tool, off to another aspect is, have you heard anything about it affecting anyone's copay, or does Magellan have any effect on what parents pay for the service?
I have not heard about any changes regarding that. It should remain the same as the identified sliding scale. And just as a reminder, if people haven't noticed, I believe it's always printed on the back page. So if you flip it over, and if it is a hardship to pay the copay on the back page, if you flip it over, there is a notice about being able to say and return it for a, you know, lowered cost or if it's a financial hardship on your family. And so I think just keeping in mind that that is an option because sometimes times are hard or you go through something that maybe you weren't when you were paying your copay, but the sliding scale copay should remain if you fall in that category.
Okay, perfect. So a lot of things are going to stay the same. There's not a big, huge effect on families on day one, it sounds like. So another question I've been hearing a lot is, you know, I think of when I go to the doctor and my insurance changes, and then now all of a sudden I have Select Health and this provider doesn't take Select Health, but they did take United Healthcare or whatever the case may be. So now that we're moving and we all have Magellan now, do all of our providers just naturally accept Magellan because it was Optum but we didn't make the change ourselves. It was given to us. Am I asking this correctly? Are all providers just naturally going to start accepting it?
Nope. And that has been a huge question, and that's a really good one. So there's two parts to this. Many providers have opted to sign a contract to transition to Magellan. Now, that doesn't mean all of them have. And that could be for various reasons. You know, maybe they need to up their licensures, you know, and maybe their licensures need to be renewed first before they could sign their contract. That's something we heard from some providers. And so that could cause a delay. things of that nature. Or maybe they opted to not renew their Medicaid eligibility at all. And so then there might be a gap. If that happens, now we do know lots, to be clear, we do know that the majority, at least last I heard, had renewed their contracts or had signed onto a contract with Magellan. So I do not foresee there being a huge gap. Now, that doesn't mean there's not a gap. If there is a gap for those that fall into that, if your provider did not, Optum has extended a 90-day grace period, which I think is phenomenal, right? Because that gives you a comfort to know that for the next 90 days, I don't need to panic. I can still go see my provider for medication management, for counseling, for whatever it may be that I was receiving while I search for one that's now in my network. I think additionally, what's important to note to help you so that it doesn't need to feel like it's on you. You don't need to be calling around and just randomly trying to feel like you are overwhelmed trying to find your child a new provider to take over everything. That hotline you used to call for Optum, the number that was on the Yes site or that was on the Optum line that you may have had saved, that is the same number that you would now call for Magellan. It seamlessly transitioned over as of yesterday. And so I think that's really important to note is that that number that was previously Optum's is now Magellan's. And so you can find that on the Magellan site or on the Yes site. In addition, you should have also received packages in your mail from Magellan for your children during this transition. And so that would be there as well.
And I will say that I did just get that package in the mail last night. Actually, I've been looking for it. And it was really, I think it was really important to me to see kind of the list of things that were going to stay the same and what they were and how it was very much kind of a release of tension in my shoulders. Like, oh, okay, we got this. It's still very much the same. And there are basically protections in place to help us navigate through this. If our provider does choose to go a different direction, where can we go now? And I think that that was really important. Again, this is just hearkening back to the ending of the public health emergency. We don't want individuals to realize that they're no longer covered when they get to their doctor's office or when they get to, you know, the Walgreens to pick up their medications. All of a sudden, it's like, oh, you don't have coverage anymore. Remember always to reach out to your doctors to update that information with the Department of Health and Welfare so that we can get these packets mailed to you so that you can get this information. Just my little public service announcement, a constant reminder. I want to shift gears again and ask, and I know that you'll be a good person to ask as an individual who does live in a more rural area and not, you know, the great state of Ada. With Magellan coming in, does it mean there are going to be any different services provided in Idaho that weren't previously? And I'm mostly asking about those rural and frontier areas. Is there a plan for more access there?
So in my conversations with Magellan, that is something that we have continually worked to remind them. And that is something that they have continually been aware of and providing. I do think it will take time, right? I think we do know that they took over on July 1, but that doesn't mean, you know, that July 1, everything is going to be readily available in every area. I think some of it might take time to build up, but I will say that I have hope that it will happen. I believe one of the things that they are saying that they are really, really working on doing is making sure that intensive services, like intensive care coordination or wraparound, are readily connected and available for children with those intensive needs right away, the second that is identified. So if we're looking at a child who's showing up in emergency rooms or youth crisis centers, or they're having a provider fill out referrals for intensive residential or psychiatric residential facilities, those kinds of levels of care, their goal is to immediately, if they already don't have an intensive care coordinator or wraparound coordinator, that they will immediately be referred for one. And so I think it might take time to build up if that built up is not already in place. I think that will be determined over the next several weeks or month. But the fact that that will be an immediate referral is something that hasn't quite happened. And I would believe that that is something that has demonstrated an intense need, especially in the last several years as we're seeing a youth behavioral health crisis. not just statewide, but nationwide, it has demonstrated a need for something like that in place. And so I know myself, I have really advocated to say that that has been needed in urban areas. And so that is immensely needed in rural areas, because in rural areas, myself, it's been in my child's plan for years and we've never seen it. And so you can tell us it's needed, but you're going to have to really build that trust with families, because just to have it in their plan and they've never seen it, you're going to have to really build that trust so that they know it's there. And I know I have really, really expressed that to their new CEO, their medical team. And I just have faith that they have really heard us in that, and that they're really going to push for that, because everything I've seen shows that that is something they're prioritizing. They are working to also have a crisis response team. And they're trained to actually also support youth, which is something we've never had before. Now, their mobile crisis teams, they're starting out with only 3 for the entire state. So I don't want to give everybody false hope that they're going to be very responsive to everybody right away. But I do want to tell you that they are trained for youth. So if they are able to respond to your youth, I do want you to know that they are trained for youth. And I think that that in itself is a huge starting point. And over the course of the year, they will be 24/7. And that also is huge, not just 9-to-5 business days. So I think we're working in the right direction. And Idaho is a very large state that is very spread out. And so, you know, we're starting out small and we're working to get to where we want.
I think that that's huge, especially, you know, like you were mentioning, a mental health crisis isn't always going to happen at 3 p.m. on Tuesday. And sometimes the emergency room isn't the best place. So the fact that there's a lot of steps being taken is just huge. And I hope that Idaho families see hope in this. Another thing that I wanted to ask that I think a lot of that I feel, and maybe I'm just putting words into parents' mouths, but that I don't think it's really quite known yet, is that, you know, Magellan is now going to be overseeing inpatient and outpatient care. And what benefit is that going to have, or what does that mean for our families?
This is another big looming question, to your point. I will tell you from my perspective, this is the most exciting thing about this contract. And I think a lot of people don't understand that, but this is why. So most states do this already. Most states, when they have a behavioral health contract awardee, they manage inpatient and outpatient. And the reason being, so previously, Optum was in charge of all outpatient care. And outpatient should be your first line of defense, right? You want to think of it like earlier intervention. We know that earlier intervention is best practice. We get in there while children are young. We really provide them with those critical skills to help get their language developed, all these things if we're seeing delays young, because we know that that is best practice. And that can help bolster them and get that in there while their brain is still malleable. So if we do that, we know what this shows. So the same thing with behavioral health care. If we can do it in their home and community, it shows that it's best, right? The goal is to not institutionalize. So home and community services, if we can really bulk them up, really build them up and do all these things, we can try to prevent any institutionalization. Now, we know that's not always possible. Sometimes somebody does need that level of care. Can't always prevent it, but we'll do the best we can if we can build up those services. So when you have separate, when there's a big separation between inpatient and outpatient, there is no onus on the person who provides the outpatient care to bolster and provide all those services. Because if they don't, and somebody who continues to need those services and they're not getting them in the outpatient, well, the onus isn't on them to provide it. Because if they don't, all right, well, we'll just kick the can down the road, because the onus falls on now a different division, a different agency, to provide that really high level expensive care of institutionalization of $20,000, $30,000 a month when the individual is now in need of that. So now that individual is at risk of institutionalization, which is not where we wanted them to be, but they didn't get that earlier intervention that could have helped prevent that. All those tools, all those skills, now they're at the level of institutionalization because they didn't get that other service or services likely. So now they need this highest level, highest cost, highest risk. And here they are. And now it's harder to reintegrate. It's harder to all these things. It's a trickle down effect. And like we just said, it's extremely costly. Another reason nobody wants that on top of that, right? At least nobody from that standpoint. No agency wants to fund it nor do we want our children there,
right,
unless we have to. So if it's all under the same umbrella, the onus is on them to provide those earlier services to help keep in the home, to help support the family, to help support the child and youth, because then they can save themselves money also by not having to spend 20, 30 plus a month, 30,000 a month to send a child away. They can help keep them in the home. They can help support the family. They can help keep people together and provide the necessary services to really support somebody. And then when we have those outliers who truly, really do need that intervention despite it all, it makes sense to support it. But we'll still try to keep everybody together because guess what? The onus is on them the whole time.
So it's essentially just a check the checker, right?
Yeah.
So don't forget, either way, you're paying for it. So it behooves you to start early and be more supportive. So it's just another way to benefit families in the end and support the kids.
And which family blame may still happen, but in my experience, family blame is less likely to happen when you have the same players involved in that family circumstance the whole time, because they see this family really is trying. We're working with them the whole time. We're working with them to provide the services. Versus this family is getting passed around this whole time from this agency to this agency to this agency. And then the family often gets blamed. But if they're all engaged the whole time, they know that that family is trying.
Oh, I mean, the change is going to be good. I think if you take away nothing from that question, the change is going to be good and it's going to be helpful.
I agree.
I think the last question I have is, parents are going to, you know, have questions. We're going to want to learn more and maybe even potentially express concerns that we might have. Do you know of any upcoming opportunities where parents can share their voice?
So at this exact moment, just because it's the very beginning of their launch, they haven't put forth their next listening sessions.
Okay.
However, Magellan has made it very clear that they do want public engagement. They want to continue hosting engagement and family listening sessions. So I would be more than happy to share those with you as soon as I see the next engagement opportunities. They do have publicly on their website, Magellan of Idaho, under the, which section is it? The Magellan of Idaho, it's the member section. They do have on there the ways that you can provide feedback, ask questions, file a complaint or a concern. And I just want to highly encourage people that if you have questions, put them in there. They're really responsive. I mean, I engage with their staff all the time and I get prompt responses at all hours. I think they're amazing. Additionally, because we're talking about kids who fall under the YES system of care, under the YES website, you can find a spot to file complaints or concerns. And I really want to emphasize that also, because I think when the word complaints gets used, people are like, oh no, I don't want to file a complaint. I don't want to be that person. But the reason I really want to emphasize that one is because the YES system of care is a result of an ongoing lawsuit from the JAFD settlement agreement. Anything that is filed through there has to be looked into and it is sent over to the due process work group. And so those things are actually, something happens to it. It's not like they're just sent into a black hole and you have a voice in there, right? You can check a box that says, I don't want to be contacted. You know, I want to be anonymous. I don't want, you know, or I do, or, and you can have an advocate file on your behalf. I file for families all the time who don't want their name in there. You have a lot of options, but if it has to do with anything in the YES system of care, I cannot emphasize enough using that site, because that means it has to be looked into. Because if it's happening to you, odds are it's happening to somebody else. And then we can do something about it and we can improve it for everybody.
Absolutely. And I will make sure that those websites that you just mentioned are linked in the description box so people have easier access to them. If when you make that comment, something weighing heavy on their noggin automatically goes, yep, that's me. I want to make my voice heard. We'll make sure that you have access to that. But I just want to say, Brittany, you are amazing. You are instrumental. You are making the stuff and the things happen and keeping the wheels moving. And we are beyond appreciative of the work that you do and the time, you know, that you've spent even just here with us today. But if I had one more question or last request, it would be, Do you have any parting thoughts?
My last parting comment to any families, it's just don't be afraid to advocate for your child. If something doesn't feel right, just say something or ask somebody about it. Don't be afraid. It definitely takes a village. And I think the biggest thing I would leave you with is that the YES system of care is built around the child and family team. And so that being said, your child and your voice are central and the most important part. And just never forget that. Your voice and your child's voice are the center of it all. And so remind yourself that.
You heard it, families. Well, I just want to say another, again, big, huge thank you to you, Brittany, and your time. And if anyone out there is listening on this and says, hey, you know, I love everything Brittany said and I want to get involved, please do not hesitate to reach out and I can absolutely get you connected. The more voices, the better. But again, Brittany, thank you so much for your time.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Allison.
Thank you so much, everyone out there, for listening in. And know that if you are in Idaho or planning on moving to Idaho and have questions on systems or services for children with disabilities, please consider reaching out to us on our website at IPULIdaho, that's IPULIdaho.org, or by calling us at 208-342-5884. Be sure to tune in next time. Until then, this has been Unlimited Parenting.
Thanks for listening.